And we're back, or I'm back, or somebody's back. It's Wednesday morning, folks, and we are having technical difficulties. If you did try to tune into the show at the normal 10 o'clock time and all of a sudden disappeared, that's because, thanks to my cousin Murphy, who decided to run a bunch of technical issues, one of them being, thank you very much, Trend Micro, for deciding to do your update right at the beginning of the show, and that, of course, hogs up all the processor time. By the way, if you're wondering who this is speaking, my name is Robin, and I'm up here in our remote, I'm doing a remote today up in the Portland area, and on the other end of the link.
Hi, I'm Cliff, and I'm down at the, I'm in the normal place. I haven't changed, I haven't moved. I'm just where I normally was.
He's in our northern studio.
Northern. This is south.
Southern.
You're
southern.
North.
See, I'm a truck driver. That's why I get lost all the time.
Okay. Back off of your mic just a little bit, by the way. Sorry, you're a little heavy.
There we go.
Anyway.
I'm out here in the KRBN mobile studio, and it's kind of a new experience for us. We've thought about going on the road and trying the technology out while we're getting the opportunity to do so, which is kind of a change compared to actually being in front of the control board in the main studio and having all the professional equipment that we have in the studio. So being out here on remote. But if it does work out, it does give us a lot of flexibility about what we can do and where we can go and bring better and more and better content to you, our listeners.
Well, we keep talking about the fact that we can broadcast from anywhere in the world, and now we've got to set out to prove it if we can.
That's right. So if you'd like us to come and make a personal visit, just send a large amount of money to the donate button on the KRBN Radio website.
As much money
and
as
we'll
you
bring
can.
The, yeah.
Really.
Well, and we'll bring the KRBN mobile studio to your area.
There you go. We'll go anywhere. Well, almost anywhere, I suppose.
Well, that's how much they're willing to donate.
Well, if they've got enough, I'd love to go to Istanbul again. I enjoyed Istanbul when I was there. I was there. Of course, this was years and years and years ago, so who knows if it's the same now as it was then, and I'm sure it's not, but I really enjoyed it for the time that I was there, and I'd love to go back and visit Turkey and Istanbul. So there's the hint, folks.
There's the hint. I don't know if I want to go any place I can't spell.
Istanbul? You can spell Istanbul. That's easy. It used to be Constantinople, you know. Istanbul
right.
Was Constantinople. Now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Anyway, there's a whole song, and I love the song. It's stupid. But whatever.
I'm thinking, I can't say on the air.
Okay. It's one of those days, I tell you. It really is, right from the beginning, as a matter of fact. But anyway, so the thought has been there that of what we can do. But we can go any place, and I'm kind of interested in picking anybody up if somebody wants to join us. If I guess it'd be preferable if you had Skype, but you don't even have to have that. If you have Skype, you could join in on our conversation and be a part of the hosting group for a day or something.
Including let's have an on the same line. Let's have an open invitation to other Blog Talk hosts out there if you'd like to come on and be a part of the roundtable discussion. Send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. And normally at this point I would give out the phone numbers and stuff, but we are pre-recorded for rebroadcast in this time zone. So I guess giving out the phone numbers would not do any good.
Rebroadcast in all time zones.
However, I don't have it on my board, but Cliff, you could even have the... Well, of course, I guess to even open up the chat room doesn't do any good right now. So
really?
Thanks to our technical difficulties and...
Well, we could open up the chat room, but nobody can hear us, so they wouldn't know what to chat about.
Yeah. Normally, though, you could join us in the chat room. Normally, you could call us at 646-721-9887.
Next week.
Next week. But you can always send us an email at talk@krbnradio.com.
Right, right. So that would be interesting because we've had people, interesting, looking back at things, our callers have been from all over the world. I mean, we have callers from Austria and and where all kinds of places. It would be very interesting to get somebody on the line and help us with the program or host the program with us with from one of these countries and different countries. It would be I don't know. I like the idea of it being an international program rather than being local. It makes it a little more difficult as to decide what to talk about and what to discuss because there's so many things that we can discuss. But it is really an interesting thought to have somebody join us from all over the world. That would be great, in my opinion.
Exactly. And don't let the name Oregon Update fool you because as you regular listeners know, we...
That just means that we're updating everything from Oregon. We're in Oregon.
Exactly.
Well, I was going to say at least most of the time we're in Oregon, but you're still in Oregon. You're just a lot at the far end of it, or at the top end of it is what it is. Portland's right up at the top end of Oregon. I'm closer to the bottom end of Oregon, not really down at the bottom, but, well, I guess I'm in the middle, aren't I? That's what we're considering.
I think you're down and to the left.
Well, don't say that. Everybody's going to think that's political that I'm to the left. And I don't know if I am or not. I've never really figured out what's left and what's right and what's conservative and what's not and all that sort of stuff. I mean, people put these labels on everything, and I get completely and totally lost with them and don't know exactly what's going on. The only thing I know that's going on in this particular... Oh, hey, there is one thing I wanted to bring up and want to make sure...
What's that?
Oh, well, never mind. I can't. I was going to say there's a debate... But it's going to go on tonight, and we're not on today, so consequently, never mind. But
it doesn't matter, and you got me all excited for nothing.
There is a debate, a Republican debate happening this afternoon or this evening sometime. I don't know the time exactly, and I was getting frustrated because I can't find the time. But there's going to be like six of them this year.
Is that the debate that Obama decided that he wanted to... Give the announcement at the same time, or was that last week?
I think this is the one. Obama this is interesting. I've been watching the program West Wing, which is a really old program on television about the government and how it works, and it's about the White House and the West Wing of the White House, and it's amazing what's going on in this television program, the series. That is actually happening in real life today, and it's amazing. You can see how arrogant the president and the members of Congress get once they get in that position and start.
Well, I wouldn't say arrogant's the word really with our president. I'd say a small child pretty much describes him because. Like with the like when they decided to schedule his job speech at the same time that they're doing the debates, and God bless John Boehner, somebody's actually standing up to the president is not afraid to say no, and that's really frustrating Obama.
It really is. But the thing is, I don't think he was doing it as a little child. I think he was just doing it because he's so accustomed that when I say jump, you say how high. Because I'm
the
president.
Reason why I'm saying that, the reason I'm saying that as a child is because when somebody told him no, he starts crying. I mean, figuratively speaking, and then he goes, does these little press conferences, and, I wanted to give my speech on this day, and they said I couldn't, or I tried calling John Boehner, he wouldn't return my phone calls. I'm going to tell the world.
Really? Well, it is. I agree with you. It's very interesting to have him... have someone at least, and Boehner is pretty. The more I see of him, and when he does go on the television and talk, the more impressed I am with him. But I don't think he even wants to be president. I don't think he's considering even running or ever running. I don't know. I doubt it.
I like him right where he's at. I like the fact that somebody's actually standing up to our self-imposed monarchy and saying, "Hey." No.
Well, Speaker of the House is a pretty important position, no matter what you want to call it, because he really is pretty important as far as our hierarchy of government is concerned. And I'm happy to see somebody in there who can think for himself instead of the how high you want me to jump every time the president opens his mouth. And I'm glad to hear it.
Well, come to think of it, I haven't heard. Now, granted, the type of work that I do, I don't get to listen to the radio that often. I have not heard John Boehner really come out and be really more concerned about, well, you know, bipartisan, or, you know, we got to make peace between the aisles. As much as I've heard Obama come out and say that, well, you know, we got to make peace with the people across the aisle. We got to communicate. We all got to go play golf so we can have better relations between the aisle. I mean, treating it like it's the two sides of the house are foreign countries, and we have to take Kissinger out of retirement if he's still alive, and send him in there and negotiate.
See, that's,
we all just get along.
That's where I consider them being arrogant, because he is just thoroughly convinced that whatever he, you know, if you're compromising to the Democrats or to the president specifically, is that you come to my way of thinking. You know, if you don't think the way I think, then you're not compromising. I mean, I'm not going to go and do anything to the way you believe it's to be done, but you can do it to the way I want it to be done. And that's the name of the game. And the whole Democratic Party has this thing about the way to fix everything is to have more taxes. That's when you want to spend more money, the way you get more money is you impose more taxes. Well, you know, there is a point where we don't, and I will have to, you know, there's a couple of things that I'm afraid that I would upset some people, because my opinion of the way things should be done is a little different. One of the things is people keep saying, well, why can't we do more manufacturing in this country? We're not manufacturing anything in this country. Well, the reason we're not manufacturing anything in this country is because we can't. We can't afford to do it. You can't afford to build something in this country and pay the wages that this country is paying to people and then be able to sell it in the rest of the world, because the price would be so high. You can't sell it anywhere in the rest of the world, and you have to sell it. You can't get along by just selling in country, so to speak, in-house. You've got to encompass the rest of the world. And so the reason people are going to different countries, to India especially, that's particularly where they're going more than anywhere else, I think. But the reason they're going to India is because for $10 an hour, they can make things that they could make here that would cost $40 and $50 an hour. And consequently, the sales prices can be better. Or
And let me throw something else in, since you brought this up. This is a perfect platform for my rant and rave, and based on an experience I had yesterday, that you know, the argument about getting jobs and people being qualified for the job. Now, Cliff has known me for years, and he knows me. my background is in electronics, and I've been an industrial technician, and I think I'm pretty good at it. And in fact, according to Cliff, that when he used to work at K&ND in Cottage Grove, I kind of blew away two other companies that were trying to fix their networking system on their computers. Because it's one thing that I do. I've done that for a long time, and I used to work for an international corporation which closed and went to school. That's another story. We've talked about that before. But I've been trying to get back into it. Well, yesterday, I made a few phone calls with the state of Oregon, because I've been seeing some jobs that pay pretty good in my field that do pretty much exactly what I did before. However, now here's where the state of Oregon is throwing a barrier in. They're requiring a license, an LME license, which is a limited manufacturing electrical license, which is okay. I mean, they can have any type of license that they want if it's obtainable. Well, as it turns out, part of the requirement for that license is that you either go through a two-year apprenticeship or have at least 2 years or 4,000 hours of experience in the field in order to qualify to take the test, and, of course, give the state $100. You know, that's because they want their money. All right. Well, I have 8 years as an industrial technician working on high-speed production equipment and robotic equipment. I don't qualify. And the reason why I don't qualify, because apparently either it wasn't a requirement when the company closed in 2003, or the company didn't follow the rules and we were unaware of it. But because we didn't have licensed technicians there for whatever reason, those 8 years' experience don't count. And the only way in Oregon that I can get back into my field is to try and get on as a two-year apprentice or leave the state.
Yeah, there's a lot of different states come up with different rules, and of course, right now, one of the things that I see all the states coming up with is they're coming up with any kind of rule that'll increase their income, any kind of rule that you where you have to pay for a license or pay for a tags or pay for something, and because the states themselves are in such dire straits as far as finances are concerned. This whole financial thing is about to collapse around our ears is what's happening. And it simply, again, goes back to the same thing. We can't pay the kind of wages that we've been paying. And part of the problem with that is I don't know.
Well, you figure, too, that think of it as a tree. The people are the roots of the tree that support the government. Well, when they keep raising taxes, they're taking the ability of the roots to go out and flourish, and so the roots are not putting out any type of nutrition, and so the tree starts to die. Well, the tree realizes it's starting to die, and it can't bloom as much as it used to. So it's trying to increase the root size. Well, the root size isn't able to increase, so the tree is basically starving. Well, we are the roots. The economy, the way it is starving at the moment. And like you're saying, we're choking ourselves that we can't get industry over here.
And I was taking a look and trying to find out what President Obama's jobs program is going to be. And the only thing I can find out is it looks like he wants to spend another $600 billion to spur jobs
like a stimulus package.
Well, it's
where
sort
they,
of
where he came out and said that we're going to monitor to make sure the states don't spend it frivolously. And yeah, that's great if you happen to be the person that got how many millions of dollars to track the migration of snails.
Yeah, really. And well, that's another thing entirely. But he's doing the same thing again, basically, because that's the only thing he knows how to do. You can't see, that's the problem when your solution is to raise taxes or to spend money, and to spend money, not just or. But that's this Democratic solution for everything, and that's not the solution that continues to work. You realize this last month was the first month again in a year where we had no job growth whatsoever. We're at 9.1 nationally average for our jobs. But this the no growth thing, you can't have any growth when the only thing you're doing is government jobs, because basically government jobs don't last forever. And if they do, you can't have the whole country working for the government. Somebody has to pay the taxes that
right.
pays the government workers. And if the whole country works for the government, then there's nobody paying those taxes. And so we're absolutely lost. So that's why you can't solve the problem by adding government jobs. You've got to add private sector jobs in order to solve this problem for any length of time. And that's what's happened before. We've added the government jobs in various places, and then all of a sudden, once they're done, the people no longer have a job, and so the jobless rate goes way up again, and we're back in this big circle of loss, as a matter of fact. So basically, the only way we can do this is again, and I know the Republicans keep pushing this whole thing. I guess I am basically a Republican, but the point being, you've got to think with your own mind about how to do this. And so the way to convince private industry to hire people is to give them more money. Now, the only way we can give them more money, I mean, handing out money as a stimulus program, doesn't accomplish anything. So the only way you can fix that is to let them keep more of the money that they make instead of paying it in taxes. So
yeah, but you got to realize that this is we're getting financial advice from an agency that can't even handle their own budget. They've already maxed out their credit cards and convinced the lending institutions to raise their limit a little bit. And once they got that limit increased, they went right out and continued their spending as normal.
But you see, that's in okay. I'm gonna say that in a way that's our fault, because we as citizens have sat back and allowed them to do this for 40 years without making any problems. They have done this. There's two things that they've done. One is they've increased the debt ceiling year after year after year after year, 17, 20 times, something like that, over the years, and we just never said anything. We weren't even probably blissfully unaware of what was going on. It wasn't because they never said anything about it, that they didn't say enough about it to raise our attention. And that's what has happened this year, is that that one group of Republican people have decided to make this a thing that we need to talk about. And the other thing is this continuing resolutions. We don't even make a budget. We don't even set a budget and pass it. We make continuing resolutions and just continue, three, 4 months at a time and do this and do that so that we can adjust it every 3 or 4 months to do whatever we want to do. And nobody's ever said anything. Nobody's ever said we shouldn't do that. But we shouldn't. A continuing resolution is not a budget. We haven't had a budget for how many years? And we've got to change things. And that comes to my basic thing, that we've got to get in and do some sort of a program, a concerted effort to change the people in office. I've talked before.
And it's going to be in it.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead and finish your talk.
Well, I was just going to say, I've talked before about term limits. This is the way we work term limits, is we just dump them out of there and put new people in. And that there are other problems, but that's basically the way to do it. Go ahead with what you're going to say.
Well, speaking of term limits, I think it was Romney, I need to look it up, that I was reading the day when he was asked about term limits, and he was saying, no, if people don't think we're doing a good job, they can just get rid of us.
That's exactly right.
But as a person that was writing the article commented about that, is, yeah, that's true, but it's not that easy to get rid of you.
Actually, it is. All we have to do is get a bunch of people out and get them, convince them to vote and vote their conscience and vote what they want. Of course, you see, and that works well in two different ways. One is, who knows, if I stand out here and yell loud enough, maybe not everybody agrees with me. And if everybody doesn't agree with me, then and they all vote their own way, then we're going to get the way the majority of people want things done. But my problem is, another real concern I have is that once you get voted in and elected to an office, then you spend 2/3 of your time in office trying to vote to scrape up enough money to get returned to that office. And we've got to stop that. This expense, this campaign reform needs to be something that we need to consider. And I don't actually have an answer to that. I've got several of them. I could sit down and we could go along with them. But I'd need a group of people to sit down and see if we can come up with a consensus as to what to do. Because basically, it's going to – our country –
Well, and I'm in total agreement with you, because you have – without term limits, you know, they get into office, they spend years up in there. It becomes a career and a lifestyle for them. Then they become totally out of touch with just you and me, the people that they represent.
Yeah.
And they forget why they're up there in the first place.
Well, that's what I say. That's where the total arrogance comes along. I'm here, I'm in power, and I'm going to do whatever I want to. And one of the things that goes on that I've noticed in this program that I've been watching is they spend an inordinate amount of time trying to convince somebody else to vote their way, trying to convince somebody else that I'm right and you're wrong. That's what they spend their entire time trying to do, is convince groups of Democrats or groups of Republicans or groups of people in the House that you know, I'm right. This is the way it should be done. We need to have the most important thing has got to be the limit on how much you can spend. We've got to come up with a caps and definitely caps, because you just can't spend as much as you want to and then just go out and tax more to get the money that you need. That's where that's got to come to an end. Our budget has, if you start looking at it, has grown huge amounts in the last 10 years. I mean, we've gone from what, $1.2 trillion budget 11 or 12 years ago to a $17 trillion budget, right? Well, that's the 17 includes the money that we owe. But it's still huge, huge differences. And when you're talking about trillions of dollars, we're talking about something that's not going to be paid off. You know, everybody gets upset that we're leaving it to our kids to pay off, and we are. We simply are. And but anytime you're over a couple trillion dollars, we're there, and it's never going to be paid back. Something has got to collapse here. The budget itself has got to collapse. Something has got to, and it's going to hurt everybody. I think it's going to be a real major fall that the whole country is going to take. But I'm not sure about what the whole world is going to do. Everybody is sitting around and doing this. Greece.
Well,
is,
I think what happened recently, because typically when you think of the national debt. One of the first things you ask is, well, okay, why should I care? How does it affect me? And, you know, because we're too busy going on with our own little lives trying to make it. And we're assuming that the people that we put into office, they're doing their job and, you know, running the country the way they're supposed to be. But apparently that what's come to light, especially after Obama's been in office, and it's not just strictly him, it's just brought everything to light, that they're not doing their job. They've become complacent on their job, and now we're in this huge mess. The economy, like you pointed out earlier in the program, we're at zero growth, and yet our expenses are going up, meaning taxes, because government is seeing a lack of revenue, which is frustrating them. And like I said, their only option is to raise taxes and fees, but the economy isn't good enough to support that anymore. And at some point, as somebody says, at some point it's going to hurt.
Oh, it is. It is. It's going to be a major hurt, and as far as I can see, because we've got to equalize the different countries. We can no longer be a country all by ourselves. It's just becoming very apparent that we can't do that. We have to even be careful what we say, because now we've got CNN and Fox and all these networks and things that when you say something, it's heard worldwide instantly. It doesn't wait for anything. People can, as you're saying it, perhaps watch you or hear you say it. So you've got to be careful what you say. You've got to be careful what you say about other countries. And the thing is, we are so ingrained with the fact that we should be the leader of the world and that we should be telling people how to do things, and that's not the way it can work. These are other countries that are just as important in the world as we are, although we don't want to admit that, but we can't tell everybody how to do things. And so we need to get our butts out of there. I mean, it's like $80 billion we're involved in as far as foreign aid is concerned. We're giving away about $80 billion a year. And when you're talking about $17 trillion, it's a small amount. But at $80 billion a year, if we kept that home and didn't send it out to different countries and try to influence how they do things, we could actually accomplish a lot with that $80 billion in our own country. And we need to bring it back home again. And
That's a frustrating thing in itself, that we're telling other countries how to run their lives, and we can't even get our own act together.
And that's what's becoming apparent. The other countries are not paying attention to us anymore because they're being able to see the fact that we're not doing very well in our own backyard. Why should they listen to us? And, of course, if they practice the old "do as I do, not as I say" thing, then they're going to be like Greece. Greece was practicing basically what we do, and watching what we do, and doing the same things. And they went bankrupt. They've lost it. And of course, as you can tell, they've had lots of uprisings and things like that. People don't want to have their way of life disrupted. But when the government has overspent and overextended themselves, then they're going to have to disrupt somewhere along the line and rein things in and get back into the realm of reality. And then, of course, the people that have had this great life for so long are going to get upset. They're going to yell and scream and holler.
Well, and things are starting to change here. As the campaign starts to roll out and these candidates are having their open houses or town hall meetings, I guess is what it's called. Off the top of my head, I don't remember the players that ran into this problem, but two of the candidates, I think one of them was Michelle Bachmann, they got up on stage and gave their introductory speech. And the usual stuff, government's bad, we need jobs, we need blah, 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 the usual spiel that they give. And when it came to the question and answer session, they were expecting, the usual questions. Oh, what are you going to do about jobs? What are you going to do about abortion? Instead, the first thing that was asked, and the audience wouldn't sidestep it, is, what are you going to do about our borders? What are you going to do about immigration, about illegal immigrants? What are you going to do? And it totally took them aside. Is that, it just shows basically how out of touch the government is in a way, because every time I read an article, even a pro article on immigration, all the comments on there are, great, we got nothing against immigrants, we have everything against illegal immigrants, let's start securing our border, if nothing else, just for our own security reasons. I mean, you guys make us go through and get groped at the airport, and yet the front door is wide open.
And this is another problem. This opens up because the reason people are coming to this country illegally or legally, they're trying to come legally. In a sense, we won't let unlimited amounts in legally. They're going to come illegally, is because they can make more money here than they can make in their own country. So that's where we've got to change things. We've got to do something to make wages lower in this country and higher in other countries. We've got to equalize this. It's all going to have to equalize out, and it's not just us, it's Europe and Asia and everywhere, because this is becoming absolutely apparent. We've got Asia fighting for all these. I mean, that's what it was in Egypt. They wanted more money, they wanted more and see, Egypt went along and we didn't do much in Egypt because Egypt was, interestingly enough, a fairly educated country. When we go to Libya, those people are not that well educated, and so we had to help out, and we are helping out. And the thing is, what are we getting out of this? I look and see, there's so many things. Everything is interrelated, and that's what I keep saying over and over again. Everything is interrelated. Everything is, it's a one-world thing now, right? Whether you like it or not, that's what it is. And so, consequently, we've got to do more. And
well,
boy,
if things weren't just so darn expensive. I mean, I'll give you an example. I remember when I used to only have to pay $8 a month for water. Now that $8 bill is $32 a month.
See, and the thing is, it's interesting the reasons for that. One of the reasons for that has nothing to do with this, what we're talking about. It has to do with the fact that your local government has sat on its butt and done nothing about the infrastructure. They've done nothing about the being able to deliver the water, or they put in pipes 100 years ago and then just forgot about them, figure they're going to last forever. Nothing lasts forever, like it or not. It just doesn't happen. You've got to be able to go in there and do some work on things. So the infrastructure is one thing, in my opinion, that we do have to consider spending money on.
I agree with you. I agree with you. If the money went for that. But like in Portland, for example, they have tacked on to the water fee other programs. that have nothing to do with the utilities or the utility services, like money for bike paths, or, you know, are tacked onto your water bill in Portland.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things we're having a problem with, a major problem in federal government as well. This is this adding different things in there. You want money for something, so you put together a bill that everybody's interested in, and then you tack this little thing in there that people don't happen to notice, I guess. See, we've got to take back into consideration, we've become such a big country that we just let the people that we elect have full run over whatever they want to do. And you can't do that. We've got to get in there and start paying attention ourselves individually to see what's happening. And don't vote for things that have these amendments on them and attachments to them and whatever you want to call those things that throw different things, you know.
Don't let the government, like they did locally in Oregon, with Measure 56, 57 or something like that, where they were saying that, that some corporations don't pay their fair taxes or only pay $10 or something like that, and that's their main focus, and which is true. Some corporations don't pay more than $10, but some corporations are only one or two people. But that's what their focus was to get to rough up people's feathers, and, you know, by sending out misleading information to get the bills passed, and
that's one of the things that we've got to change. The word politics is synonymous with lies, and we've got to change that. This the idea of being able to lie to get what you want has got to be stopped. I mean, there's so many different things going on, but I think the most important thing at this particular point is that we've got to put a limit to spending. We've got to say how much can be spent, and everything else has a percentage. In other words, everything goes up with the cost of living percentage. So in other words, if we spent $1 trillion last year, we can spend 9% more this year, and that's all. And we can allow that. But it's got to be based on the cost of living, and there's got to be a cap on what can be done, rather than just this open face thing, this debt ceiling limit, where you can just go on there and say whatever you want to spend, and then just adjust your ceiling and make it legal. I mean, we've got to have some sort of control, and that's what we don't have, and that's the thing that. Of course, when Obama went into office in the first place, he did inherit a problem, and so he was allowed to just spend huge amounts of money if he wanted to fix these things. And of course, it is true I disagree with how he went about fixing it, but I don't think he really fixed much of anything, but he did at least slow it down pass it on so that it's going to happen later instead of then, and so we'll see what happens. We're still, our economy is still rock bottom, and we haven't accomplished anything, but he doesn't know any other way of spending his way out of it, other than spending his way out of it, and that's why we've got the Republican group of people, Boehner and that group of people have got to stay adamant about the fact that we've got to change things at how they work. We've got to stop spending more and put a limit on whatever it is. So, whatever we limit, everything has to be limited to a specified amount, and then we have to. And it has to be based on what we know can come in. And of course, once you put that spending limit on there and stop. Draining people of any money that they might have by taxing them more, then they're going to have a little more money to spend, and then they're going to start hiring these people, and the amount of money we got coming in is going to go way up, because all of these people who don't have jobs now are sooner or later going to have jobs. It's going to make a huge difference. So we've got to consider
I like Jesse Ventura's argument about changing the way the taxes are done and getting rid of the federal income tax and changing it to the federal sales tax, because it makes the federal government more in touch of the health of the economy. Because, you know, economists have proven mathematically many times that if you lower taxes, the economy starts thriving, which, of course, puts more cash into the government coffers. But when you raise taxes, you don't gain prosperity through raising taxes, basically.
That's right.
But speaking of money, poor old Skippy is looking for something to eat.
Oh, poor old Skippy.
Yeah, poor old Skippy. And since our things are not working,
okay, I've lost you somewhere along the line. You've hit a wrong button or something. I know what she was going to talk about. She was going to talk, since she's talking about Skippy, she was going to be talking about the barking dog cookies, because we have them as a sponsor on our program at this particular point, and barking dog cookies are a real important thing that you can... Go to krbnradio.com if you'd like to do that. And over on the left-hand side, you'll have a thing for barking dog cookies. And you can click on that and get more information about the barking dog cookies. And barking dog cookies are a real interesting thing. They're an excellent dog food type of... They're a treat. More, I mean, you know, you don't really want to live on cookies, but they are a treat, and the dogs love them. As a matter
okay,
of fact.
Okay, I do have a question for you.
Oh, you are there. You're back. Okay.
I am back. I bumped a wire, and I got to get a new hub. Dancing dog cookies.
Oh, dancing dog, not barking dog.
Not barking dog.
Well, they bark because they like them.
That's right. It's like, don't mess up the only sponsor that we currently have right now. This is live radio, folks, and, well, this actually is not live radio because my cousin Murphy is having a great time today.
Really?
But dancing dog cookies, they're really neat. They look cool, too. They look like real little cookies and bunches of different shapes and stuff. So check them out on the web, dancingdogcookies.com. And I've got a couple of news items. If you
know, one of the things that I want to say, too, that you, because I didn't get a chance to get it in, is that these dancing dog cookies are all natural ingredients and preservative-free. They don't have preservatives in them. So, you know, they're going to be good for you, as well as the dog is going to love them. They're also going to be good for your dog at the same time, and they can help clean their teeth and various things. So it's not, you know, it's not frivolous in any way, shape, or form. It's an important thing. Okay.
And they are available in select stores around town, and if your pet shop doesn't have them, ask them to get them. DancingDogCookies.com. Your dogs will love them. But anyway, I got a couple of news items here if you'd like to change gears for a moment. Normally I would do at this point, we would play the What the Heck Are They Thinking segment. So, what the heck are they thinking? I don't know. Okay, I'm going to tell you. A couple of these items are in the news. Okay, you've heard about people that have been going around stealing copper. I mean, anything that has copper in it, you know, from air conditioners to actually some of them jumping into a power station and stealing copper from there. You know, it's been kind of on a rampage. And well, I guess now there's a new trend that's going on, and that's batteries. And basically, recently in Miami, at the Miami-Dade County Public School bus depot, someone came in and stole 32 buses, which equates to about 64 batteries, assuming that each bus has two batteries each, since they're diesel. Can you imagine how long it would take to steal that many batteries? I mean, batteries out of 32 buses in one night?
Chances are you got the whole night to do it, so, and it depends on how many of you there are. So it would be a long, but, you know, they're also very heavy. If you stole 50 batteries and tried to take them somewhere, what are you going to be carrying them in?
It definitely had to be an organized situation. The batteries that they use, like in semis, for example, they're not your standard car battery size.
Yeah.
They're big, heavy batteries, and so you've got to get in there, zip it off, and put it into something to carry it out.
And you put 50 of those in the back end of your pickup truck, and your pickup truck is not going to go anywhere. I mean, it's just going to drag the ground. I mean, they're heavy. Batteries have a considerable amount of lead in it, I believe. They're called lead-acid batteries, and so that, I assume, is what they're getting going after in the batteries is the lead at this particular point. Yeah. And unless they're just, well, I don't know if you could go out and sell them because, like you say, they're not normal batteries. You'd have to, if a school system or a state had somebody in there trying to sell them a whole bunch of batteries, I'd get a little concerned about where did they get them and start finding out.
Yeah, the retail price on batteries is not that much. I mean, just for a car battery, you know, you're looking like $10, $15 for exchange.
Yeah. That's true. But anyway, but the copper, that's the thing that gets to me. There are people just really going gangbusters on the copper. Anywhere they see that they might get a little bit of copper, they just really, I didn't know the price of copper was that high. I know the price of gold is going insane. Do you realize that we're almost $2,000 an ounce for gold? God.
Wow.
I mean, it's just getting absolutely insane. I wish now that I had bought jewelry over the years. I never have. I've never bought jewelry. So I don't have anything to sell. But if you've been one who buys jewelry, gold jewelry, it's worth an awful lot of money nowadays, I'll tell you. So.
Exactly. Well, and other articles I got here on my stack of stuff, which equates to about two pages. Now, I always bastardize your name, so I'm going to apologize up front, but our Homeland Security Secretary, Janet, I'm going to say Napolitano?
Napolitano.
Napolitano. I can never
close
say
enough.
That name.
Whatever.
Has decided that the TSA searches are a little extreme. And so
A little.
And so I guess responding to concerns and complaints, she's actually going to back off on one of the inconveniences and claiming that, you know, also thanks to better technology, she's allowed to do this. So apparently coming in the future, you will not have to remove your shoes when going through a TSA inspection station.
Oh, really? The shoes?
The groping will still stand,
about?
But, you can keep your shoes on at least.
Well, I did see that they do have a new piece of equipment nowadays that they can, when they x-ray what's going on, that it shows a symbol of what they're x-raying and not the actual thing. They're not looking at your insides and they're just seeing symbols. So if there's an extra little something hanging around out there that's not supposed to be there, they can see that there's something there, but they don't know what it is. So then they can go in and do a little more thorough search. But at least it's a little bit better than seeing everybody's private parts that walks through there. It's gotten really to the ridiculousness. I don't know. It would be interesting to see some sort of a survey of what has this really helped us any. I mean, have we really caught anybody? Have we really accomplished anything with these ridiculous searches? Or is it just something that they're doing just in case? I mean, you know, there's an awful lot of things. That's an awful lot of things that the Homeland Security invoking that particular, whatever you want to call it, gives them the ability to go do a lot of things that they couldn't do before. I don't think it's really stopped a lot of things of people. I mean, we don't have to get quite so invasive in our private personal lives as we do in order to protect our country.
Right.
Again.
Well, it's just an avenue to for extra control.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's what's upsetting me. That's what it has become. It hasn't. It's gone to the point of back to that arrogance that our elected officials have that we can do it, so we're going to. And that's what I'm getting a little upset about. Just because you're an elected official doesn't mean that you're better than I am. It just means that we wanted you to help us make some of the decisions that are a little harder to make. It's hard to make decisions when you're trying to think of 350 million people instead of one. And so that's right. Why we hire people, so to speak, to help us make those decisions. But just hiring those people to help us make those decisions doesn't make those people better than we are. It just makes them more responsible, supposedly. And that's the thing. They've gotten this an error in how to think of themselves. They think of themselves as being superior, not just being helpful. And so we've got to change something in their way that they think at this particular point. And the way to do that is if they get in there and don't do what they're supposed to be doing, if they don't just accomplish the thinking part, then we've got to just dump them right back out of there and put someone else in. So.
Well, and if you also, it gets back to that old question, is how much of your freedom are you willing to give up for the illusion of security?
Well, and I think the key word there is illusion. Absolutely. I don't think we're actually getting more security or more freedom or for the loss of our freedom, but we are losing an awful lot of our freedoms at this particular point. I don't know. I this comes back again to the Republican candidates coming up. I think we're getting closer and closer to being able to elect Ron Paul. Because this man has spoken out over the years for basically the same things. He's consistent, and he's still saying the same things. And, you know, at that particular point, I think he's one of the very few people that realizes that this is a job. This is not, we're not electing a king. We're just electing a president to...
Well, we didn't elect a king. We elected a messiah.
Yeah, really. Well, that's
you know, he was supposed to be the savior from the Bush era. Well, just like the old joke. I think it was Martha's Vineyards or whatever, where they were selling T-shirts, or someplace like that. They went to that. The T-shirt that were selling the most was the ones that President Bush saying, "You miss me yet?" or something like that.
Yeah, really, really, and believe me, I do.
Yeah,
ready or not.
I must admit, I do too. I mean, at least Bush wasn't a crybaby. But well, anyways, I got a couple other items here I'll throw at you.
Okay.
This one is over in France. And this one, man, if you live in France, be warned. If you're married and you don't perform, it can cost you. A Frenchman was fined under Article 215 of France's Civil Code 5,000 euros, which is roughly the equivalent of $7,000 U.S., to his wife for damages for lack of sex under France's Civil Code, which states that married couples must agree to a shared communal life. The judge ruled that the law implied that sexual relations must form part of the marriage.
Okay. That's interesting.
And what's unusual, I think, that it was the woman that sued the guy or complained against the guy that she wasn't getting enough.
Gee, that's just the opposite of whatever everything I hear. You know, the guy is usually constantly looking for sex, and the woman is the one that has the headache. And they're saying it's the other way around, huh?
Yeah, and speaking along that line, this is locally back in the U.S. here. You know how how it works. Maybe you don't know how it works, how sperm banks work. But anyways, if you think 8 is enough, or don't think 8 is enough, how about 150?
Okay, what are we talking about?
Okay, Cynthia Daly and her partner, using a sperm donor for 7 years, 7 years ago, thought it would be kind of nice if her son would know some of his siblings. So after doing some research, they were able to locate the children from the same donor. And to their astonishment, they watched that number grow to 150. Now, of course, sperm donors remain anonymous. They only use identification numbers to identify themselves.
I'd like you to meet 150 my brothers, sisters.
But critics are saying, especially after this information got out, They're saying that maybe they should put a because of huge earnings that these sperm banks have, that they should put a limit on how many children can be conceived with sperm from popular donors, calling for legal limits. To quote Deborah L. Spar, president of the Bernard College and author of The Baby Business Now, How Money, Science, and Political Drive the Commerce of Conception, has said is that we have more rules that go into place when you buy a used car than you would when you buy a sperm. Her point is that there are no rules in the fidelity industry to know if you're buying a lemon.
Well, you know, I guess I have a different feeling about that. I mean, if you just keep going, I mean, there's a limit to how many kids you can have on what one sperm or whatever. I mean, one visit to the sperm bank. I mean, how many kids could they get out of one visit? I'm sure there's a limit.
Well, I think it's multiple visits, and I pardon the pun because I have no other way of saying this. And this is going to be bad, but if you get off going to the sperm bank. And you just like.
Well, the idea
there.
Is that everybody gets off going to the sperm bank, but what's best about going to the sperm bank is you're getting paid for it. And so,
Right. Consequently,
why not? But that's where they need to do the limiting is how many times you can go and how many times you can donate or deposit, I guess is the word. As long as they're going to put no limits on how many times you can deposit, then there's going to be no limits on how many brothers and sisters you have if you've one of us have done that. I see nothing wrong with that myself. I don't find that a problem. And if it's that big an industry, then fine. Some of these sex industries that we talk about putting limits on and we get all upset about the things that go on with these sex industries. So what? I don't really personally think they're hurting. I'd much rather have somebody sitting at home looking at porn than drinking and driving. I mean, uh-huh. I personally, you know, everybody gets all upset at the porn industry. Actually, not every. You know, that's the thing that gets to me. Everybody is all upset about porn. Everybody says, "Oh my God, porn!" But if you look at it, everybody does it. Everybody does it. There's more money being made in the porn industry than almost everything else combined on the internet. I mean, you can sit back and you can act like you're very upset about it and that you're really surprised about it, but chances are you're one. I'm sorry. It just is the case. It's you're one. And to get upset about something that everybody's doing and you're doing it too, then that's hypocrisy plus.
Uh-huh.
It's just a really ridiculous thing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, a lot of the laws that we have on sexual things, and of course, different countries have different laws on different sexual things, and whether it's good or bad depends on where you live and how you're brought up. And so it's not a matter of what's really good or bad. It's just a matter of what your society is thinking about it. And then the big thing, like I say, is more to the point, what you think about it, let's talk about what you do about it. Because an awful lot of people will say that something is bad and then go out and do it themselves.
Anyway. Well, we won't talk about what you do about it, what you do.
So, okay.
Anyway,
we could probably stop talking about it at all. We've said enough.
And okay, go ahead and finish your point. I got one more little news item.
No, I just said we've said enough.
Okay. And finally, the president is back in the news again. This time, another controversy. The first one was over his birth certificate. This one, according to WorldNet Daily, two private investigators working independently are asking why President Obama's Social Security number is a Connecticut number, which is the 040 to 049 prefix, and the president's first job was at Baskin-Robbins in Hawaii, where their prefix is 575 or 576. Up until 1990, you would typically obtain your Social Security number before you would work at your first job after 1990. Of course, the law was changed that as soon as you're born, you were assigned a Social Security number. Of course, that leads to one of the rat and rave that I have when I learned that people running for office don't have to show that they even have the right to work in the United States like the rest of us do when we apply for a job. The White House, by the way, is stating that the President Obama's Social Security number is really a non-interest thing to the public and therefore refuses to comment on it.
Well, I don't know how interested I am. I mean, we're scratching it to, I don't know. I don't really think that the Social Security number and all of these minutiae that we're going after, what is that going to accomplish? I mean, we're not going to get the guy out of office that way. We've got to worry about who we're going to elect and who we're going to vote for. That's what we've got to worry about, rather than worrying about these little things, you know, that are get lost in there. Granted,
well,
maybe he shouldn't.
It's kind of after. It's after the fact. Sorry, you know, it's after the fact.
Is.
But that's why I'm saying is that for the upcoming elections or for future elections, one of the requirements should be, and it'll take care of all this argument of birth certificates, Social Security numbers, and everything else, is when you are sworn into office, you fill out that I-9 form just like everybody else has to, and there you go. You got your answer. If you falsify that information, well, it's easy enough to check, and you're out of office.
Well, I think it should be done long before we get sworn into it. I think when you go in and apply for the license or the ability or whatever to run for office, that's when it should be brought into play. Because once we've elected him and gone through the election process and spent all that money and all that time and we're getting ready to swear him into office, that's too late as far as I'm concerned. We've already gone through that whole thing. So let's do it before they're even allowed to go out and campaign, before they're even allowed to run for the office. Let's get all this minutia out of the way and get it taken care of, because this is picky and anti stuff. I mean, it's not necessary to worry about this kind of stuff as far as I'm concerned. Granted, I don't agree that we should just let anybody run or anybody take office, but I don't think we really should be worried that much about whether this man is an American or not. I don't think he's done anything to prove he's un-American. He's just done a lot to prove that he's unintelligent. That's all. There's a difference between...
Yeah, but what would happen? What would happen, and just think of the embarrassment, if it actually did come out that a president that we've elected is actually an illegal alien and not even qualified to be in office. I mean, just think of the consequences worldwide if that was actually true.
Well, again, I think we should be doing this long before it gets to that point. I agree with you. It would be very, very disturbing if we found out that the man is not even a citizen. The point is, he hasn't... Well, I was going to say he hasn't done anything that would indicate that he's not a citizen. I don't think he's done anything that indicates that he's trying to undermine the United States or undermine the country.
I don't know. But, have you ever heard, okay, like the thing with the federal budget, you know, he wanted to get it done either before or after Ramadan or something like that.
I don't. I think that's people, again, looking for minutia. I don't think that even entered the man's head. He wanted it done because he wanted it done before, because, you see, he had to get this pass. He had to get the debt ceiling and this. The time payment for all this stuff had to do with how he spent the money. It had nothing to do with religion, I don't believe. It had to do with the fact that he's already spent the money and has to find a way to pay for it, or he's in big trouble. And the simple fact of the matter is that that's the money is what we're following, not the religion in this case, but which was thought that would be. It's a religion.
Exactly. I also want to bring up one other point. We have 25 minutes left in the program. Is that Obama's troubles? Like, okay, recently, and I think we reported not last week because, well, I wasn't on the show, but the week before, about the 300,000 deportations that have been put on hold because of the changes in the administration's immigration policy. But as you probably remember in the news a couple of years ago, President Obama's aunt, or aunt, depending on how you pronounce it, was fighting deportation orders because she was here illegally. Well, recently, Obama's Uncle Omar, who ran into a police officer while driving drunk, overstayed his visa, and apparently he has a valid Social Security card, a valid driver's license, and yet he's been illegal in this country for 19 years, and also 3 years ago had a deportation order against him. So I guess right now, you know, Obama's two for two for having relatives in the country that aren't supposed to be here.
Well, you know, this is something that's, it's kind of an interesting thing. The fact is that we've been welcoming people from other countries into this country legally for since day one. I mean, that's what we're founded on, is the fact that everybody's from somewhere else. And to find out that there's possible discrepancies, that's not, I mean, Obama can't have any control over that. He can't tell his aunt or his uncle or his grandfather or whoever what to do before he was even around, because this is going back to before he had anything to do with it. And so I think we're nitpicking, getting into things that just really don't count. We should be more worried about how he's spending our money. We should be more worried about what he's trying to do to us than what his aunt or his uncle or whomever, just because they're here and got into trouble, that's their problem, and we should deal with them just like we would with anybody else's aunt or uncle, and take care of it just like it's being taken care of. But to blow it out of proportion is just silly. It's taking our mind and our thoughts off of something that may be important, and that's what we should be doing. We should be worrying about, right now, basically, we should be more interested in what's going on with the Republicans and the next upcoming election, because this is what's going to change what's going on in our government. This is what's going to fix our government at this point, is to change who our government is. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to concern ourselves with different town hall meetings, like you say, whether it's something locally or whether it's on the television nationally or whatever. Let's pay attention. Let's get involved and get engaged. And instead of sitting back and on our big fat tushies and just letting it happen, you can't.
Well, see, here's where I'll disagree with you, is that this is an important issue. The thing about illegal immigration, the fact that we have, they don't even have good estimates anymore, anywhere between 13 to 20 million people that are over here illegally. And it's become a big issue, including the rumors of backdoor amnesty, which is, like I just said recently, that with 300,000 deportations being put on hold, that when, if it was just anybody else, if it was you and me and I got a relative that I know is over here illegally, I mean, all I can say is, you know, you better go take care of it or whatever. But when I'm the president of the United States and illegal immigration is a huge issue, I would think that if I knew, and I'm assuming that Obama knew that he has relatives in the United States, and he probably knows what their status was because he knows why they're and how long they've been here, I would be saying, you know, you really need to go and take care of this. You know, if you're here illegally, I'll give you the money, go out and apply and come back in, because it really doesn't look really good for relatives of the President of the United States, especially as hot as the immigration issue is, to be illegal in the country. And like I say, this is just two for two so far. How many others of Obama's immediate family are in the country illegally? And is that really the reason why he's been pushing for amnesty? Is not, you know, not because of, you know, people have been here or he just wants to change the quote-unquote broken immigration system, he wants to, you know, allow his own family to be here without make without sounding favoritism by, you know, all my family's here, everybody's granted asylum.
Again, he is just the president. He can't make those decisions single-handedly. He has to go through the Senate and the House in order to do something about this. And for him to for us to think that he could just go out and pay the fine or do something and make a big thing about it, that's not the thing. The thing we've got to do is worry about getting him out of the office entirely. Worry about getting him out of the position in our government, any position in our government. We should be able. We should completely refuse to let him run for any office after this, because he seems to be one who tries to very hard to do things underhandedly. And these two particular things, I don't really think he had anything to do with. But the point is, he has been tricky and trying to sneak in things and this and that and the other. So we need to be worried about just getting him out of the office and removing him entirely. Let's not be drawn into these minor little things and taken off the main track. This is diluting our thinking and diluting our options. So let's just get him out of the office entirely and have it over with. I don't think that he's going to convince the Senate or the House to pass any major bills as far as our amnesty is concerned. He might, but that's what we should do is let's just worry about kicking him out of there so he can't.
Right. Well, and on top of that, I totally agree with you in that respect. And let's hope that we've learned from the experience.
Well, yeah, that's the case. And I agree with you that we need to get do put some laws in place so that you can't run for office without disclosing. I mean, we disclose so many things, and financial and all that kind of stuff, in order to run for office, and yet we don't even ask them if they're a citizen. Come on. Let's get down to the basics here a little bit, so we need to do a little bit more about that, and find out what and who they are before they run for the office. You know, I'd rather run somebody who is at least honest about who they are if they're the wrong person. But we've got to get some sort of a control over the little things right up front and get them while they're still little. Let's not wait until he's in the office and already screwing everybody's life over. Let's get them before they get to the office and do that sort of thing. So that's why.
I'll go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that's why we've got to get in gear and pay attention to all of the different meetings, the town hall meetings, the debates, everything that's going to be going on over the period of time between now and whenever we're going to start to actually are electing someone or voting for something. And that's why we need to consider this business of the electoral vote. We got to revisit that too and decide what to do about that, because I think our country has moved to the point to where maybe the electoral vote is a problem, it makes more trouble than it solves.
Well, I agree, but I think one thing that the government and everybody running for government needs to understand is that when people normally, unless you got the time, normally don't get involved in government unless it personally affects them. And with the economy, like you said earlier in the program, we have zero jobs growth. There's a lot of unemployment. There's a lot of people that, you know, their lives have changed because of the economy, and they're getting more involved, and they're getting very upset. You know, and that's proven, just like I said, like the town hall meetings where, you know, these candidates are coming and expecting, you know, oh, I'm just going to give my usual speech, and are finding out that what they're getting is people yelling at them, and because, you know, like I say, people are hurting, people are very upset, and it's going to be. I think the 2012 election is going to be very interesting at the very least.
It's going to be a major game plan changer. Because you're right, we're still holding unemployment at 9.1, but the difference being is there were actually zero. There was no jobs added in the month of August. Private sector gains amounted to like 17,000 jobs, and they lost more than they gained. And so there's got to be something done about this. We're losing jobs right and left. I mean, we're like 400,000 jobs behind. They don't expect our unemployment rate to dip below 6% until like 2017. Now, that's a long enough time that's going to hurt a lot of people, and we've got to do something about that. So there's got to be...
I heard that, and they said it just like, oh, well, it's just going to be 2017. You know, we just have to suck it up. It's kind of I mean, they didn't actually say that verbatim. But that's
right.
Kind of the way I took it.
Yeah. And that's what's, well, because we've been, you know, we've been going on with this for like 4 years now. So we've got to do something. You know, we're getting to the point. We've got to change what people are making. It's just, there's so many different things that we have to do. But the first thing is the elections. We've got to pay attention to the elections. That's the first thing that we can actually do, that we can actually do something about. And then once we get the people out of office that we think are really doing poorly, then we need to get the properly people on us. Then we've got to continue to pay attention and continue. We need to sit down and write to our governor, write to our Republicans, representative rather, or our senator, write to the president. We need to start doing this sort of thing and voicing our opinion, because the country is so big, it's just so big that we can't just sit back and figure somebody else is going to do it for us. They might do it for us, but they're going to do it in a way that we don't like. So if you're going to get what you want out of life, in this particular case, you're going to have to let somebody know what you want. And the way to do that is we maybe better set up a page on our website where people can go there and email their congressman or their email the president, for that matter, so that people have a way of easily getting this done. And they can, you know, it does make a difference when you do email or send a letter or whatever. They pay attention more to that than, because you can sit out here in your privacy of your home or somebody else's home, or even having meetings at the Grange Hall or something like that. You can do all that you want to, but until that information gets back to the Senate or the House or the presidency, nobody's going to know. So you've got to make your voice heard. So maybe we need to sit back, you and I, and think of a way to help people do that and to help people make a noise.
Well, exactly, and get people in there for the right reason. I mean, I heard, I believe it was on Lars Larson show the other day that somebody actually called in and was praising the president, and when, you know, asked why, what has he done, you know, he says, well, you know, he brought people together. He was a great communicator. He was,
This great communicator, I keep hearing this, and I keep watching him. He is not a communicator. All he does is read what's on the teleprompter, and he doesn't even do that very well. He is not a communicator, in my opinion. I don't know where they got that idea. I mean, he can talk, and that's about it. He can read what's on the teleprompter in front of him, and he doesn't even put the emphasis on the right syllables when he does it. I mean, he's just he's not a good communicator.
Yeah, in fact, if it wasn't for, he's almost like a puppet in a way.
Yeah.
When you think about it, because a couple times when his teleprompter broke on him, he's like, yeah, I went and visited 57 states.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he is lost. I mean, he doesn't see. That's the thing that I have felt all along, that he's getting advice from the wrong people, and he doesn't understand and doesn't know that. He doesn't even know enough to know whether the advice is good or not.
Exactly. Well, in fact, okay, here's a big headline. This is in the Politico.com from Politico that, well, I guess Obama has finally disappointed Robert Redford.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's the article is claiming, because Robert Redford apparently was a supporter of Obama's and Obama's reelection, but he says, not anymore. He says, the reason I supported President Obama is because he said we must protect clean air, water, and lands. And he hasn't done any of that. So I guess...
No, he's out there talking about clean coal. That's a big thing
to
advise for.
My point is, I guess, since Robert Redford is now disappointed, is that it now counts.
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing. And Robert Redford may be someone who actually thinks. I don't know. I don't know Robert Redford enough, and he hasn't opened his mouth enough to let us know what he really is thinking and whether he's got legitimate thoughts or not. But the point is, people are getting disappointed in the president. Lots and lots and lots and lots of people are becoming very disappointed in the president. It's not just you and me. So consequently, that's why we've got to start paying attention to what's happening in our government and start changing it. And the only way we can change it is to vote. We need to modify the tax code. There are some things that we need to do. We need to find a balanced budget law. We need to come up with something, some sort of a law that requires us to balance the budget. Because if the budget was required to be a law balanced, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems that we have, and we wouldn't spend. That's the thing. We're spending a lot of time arguing about nothing in a lot of cases. And that's what we should be worried about, what's happening in the world around us, not what's happening in our own back porch on how much money we should be spending. So we've got to consider modifying our tax code, modifying our expenditures, revising the tax code, what you want to call it, a lot of things. And then we need to worry about the fact that we've got to put the right people in office. So the first thing we've got to do is we've got to pay attention to voting. We've got to pay attention to who we're voting for. And I think we're going to have more opportunity to do that this year than ever before. The major networks are going to be doing more about putting stuff on the air that can keep us informed. And we need to listen to the debate itself. We need to listen to what the candidates are saying. Don't listen to what the hosts of the television shows are saying. Don't listen to them interpreting what the candidate said. Listen to the candidate. Interpret it for yourself. But don't listen to anybody else's opinion. And then once you've made your own opinion, you've got two things you can do. You can, if you're really adamant about it enough, let's get on in line and start sending emails and letters and things to different government officials and letting them know what you think. And then the most important thing is, when it comes time to vote, let's get out there and vote for the one you think can do the job and get the other one out of there.
Well, let me ask you this question, and I have a comment for that too. How often, whether in the news or just people that you run into in daily life, have you heard somebody really praising the president?
Well, actually, I've listened to a couple of talk shows in the nighttime, and I've heard some people praising the president. But it's not, I mean, you know, 1 in 10 will think.
1 in 10.
Yeah, maybe approximately. That's what I would say it is. It's that poorly. I mean, he's not got much support.
He doesn't have much support. He's very... very low in the poll numbers. Now let's just move ahead. This is 2012. Let's say he gets reelected, whether it's from the electoral college or popular vote or whatever, because he only got 54% of the vote this last time. I would say that there's something wrong if he did get reelected. But then again, I guess it depends on who's running against him. When you think about John McCain was running against him last time. That wasn't a very strong
Yeah, the Republicans in the last election didn't have anybody in there that was worth bothering with. And we, at that particular time, were foo-fooing Ron Paul. I don't think we're considering Ron Paul quite such a foo-foo anymore, that he's more possible. But we've got some people there that can actually think. Mitt Romney, as much as I'm not really saying I would vote for Mitt Romney, but he could do a better job than what's going on at this particular point in time. And so, and you never, you don't know who's going to, you know, we really can't sit back and decide too many actions other than to replace Obama, because it's too far away. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the economy is going to do. There's so many different things that would make a huge difference in whether he's reelectable or not. And so we've got to wait, and that's why I say we've got to pay attention to any tidbit of information that we can get on the television about these candidates and about what they're doing and about Obama himself, and pay attention. There's a lot of stuff on television. There's a lot of places you can go and see that stuff and hear that stuff. It's all there, but we've got to convince the American public to pay attention to it. We can't just sit on our fat tushies and do nothing anymore. We've got to pay some attention, and action is involved here. We've got to take some action.
Well, and there's no excuse anymore, thanks to this fad called the Internet, that you can't get any information these people. You know, look at their history. Look how they've handled themselves. Like Michelle Bachmann, for example. She stuck her foot in her mouth several times in her campaign already. So you got to look at all of these things and go, well, do I want this person? Do I want to be stuck? And you got to think of it this way: do you want to be stuck with this person for the next 4 years?
That's right. That's it. And I've pretty much discounted Michelle Bachmann, to be honest with you. She's done so many things recently that I think are basically putting her out of the running. But the Rick Perry, I haven't heard a whole lot about Rick Perry. That's what I'm really looking forward to this debate tonight. I want to hear Rick Perry stand up and talk. The only times I've actually heard him really say much of anything, I think he stuck his foot in his mouth. But other people don't disagree with me. I want to hear him actually sit there or get up there and say something in context with what other people who have actual thought processes are saying, too. You realize we're running out of time. We're an hour and 27
minutes.
We've got about
4 minutes left. Let me throw out this real quick here. And this is one of the things that disgusts me about the presidential elections is you get this huge amount of people that declare their bid for the presidency. And I have a short list here, and I'll just say real quick, what gets me is why these people decide to run for president, and then they don't do anything, they don't stick with it, but here's a short list. You probably haven't even heard of some of these people. All these people declared their efforts to be in a candidate. One is Stuart Alexander.
Yeah.
He wants to be the socialist president candidate from the Socialist Party, I guess. Herman Cain, Republican candidate, Libertarian.
Well, you've heard a lot about him.
Robert Gary.
Yeah.
And then we got good old Newt. And which, of course, every time I hear the word, you know, Newt Gingrich, as I think of Monty Python. He turned me into a newt. But anyways, and real quick here, we have...
I think has given up.
Yeah. From New Mexico, Gary Johnson. I guess gay rights activist Fred Krager. Andy Martin. Thad McCulter. Jimmy McMillan. Tom Miller. Oh, yeah. And Barack. Ron Paul. Rick Perry. Carl Persson. Buddy Romer, Mitt Romney, Rick, I can't pronounce his last name, Randall Terry, Arlie Wrights, Vern Wininchi or something like that. All these people are running for presidential candidates, but how many of them have you actually heard of?
Well, that's true. There's not very many of them, and there's a lot of different parties that are established parties that are running people. I mean, we've got 30 seconds left, so we better call it a day. But it's been an interesting program today. I've been, you know, through all of the trials and tribulations of getting us on the air. Hopefully this will work this time. So.
Absolutely. And we'll be back again, if my cousin Murphy will leave us alone, next Wednesday morning, 10 a.m. Pacific time. Join us again. With apologies that we were not live this week, but at least we'll have something on there. Send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, as always. And you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and download us on iTunes. So we're everywhere, be everywhere, and with the mobile KRBN unit, we can be almost anywhere.
Listen
so
to
until
the
next
debates.
Week,
watch the debates.
Watch the debates, and send us a comment. Again, pros, cons, who's your favorite candidate, who do you like, who do you not like? And even Cliff is thinking about running this year. So
there you go.
tell us what you think about him, about that. So anyways, until next week, folks, this is Robin and Cliff. And everybody have a happy and safe week, and watch the elections.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.